Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by Menlo Park Dental Excellence, providing general dentistry with quality care to all patients, serving patients one at a time with no triple booking, flexible hours Monday through Saturdays, mpdentalexcellence.com.
Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. This week, a massive tug of war is unfolding in a Fresno courtroom over who has greater claim to the water in the rivers of Northern California. On the request of a couple Central Valley water districts, Judge Lawrence O'Neill granted a temporary restraining order on releases down the Trinity River, which feeds into the Klamath. Farmers say they need that water, but so do tribal fishermen, and they travel to Fresno to make their case, as Alice Daniel reports.
Outside the U.S. District Courthouse, Northern California tribal members yell and wave signs at passing cars. Humboldt County holds senior water rights, and the tribes say a federal judge should not have halted the plan to release more water last week. Hoopa Valley Tribal Chairwoman Daniel V. Hill Mastin says without the release, tens of thousands of salmon could die.
The water being released is very important to the Hoopa Valley people because it's our subsistence, it's our life.
The judge has asked for scientific proof that the salmon need all the water planned for release. Two water districts that hold secondary rights to the river and serve many farmers in the western San Joaquin Valley filed suit to stop the release. Dan Nelson directs the San Luis and Delta Mendota Water Authority. He says the Bureau of Reclamation didn't take into account valley farmers and fisheries along the Sacramento River.
They didn't take into consideration the unemployment, the acreage that would be put out of production.
The judge is expected to rule this week. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in Fresno.
Most Californians have a rough idea there are hundreds of thousands of Mexicans picking our crops during harvest season. But the details of their lives are a little hazy unless we live in farm country. The details are what make the book Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies a provocative read. To study the human cost of the way we farm today, UC Berkeley anthropologist Seth Holmes strapped on a backpack and traveled with Treaty Indians between their hometowns in Oaxaca and the farms of the western U.S.
The title of the book, in a sense, Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies, indicates a transaction in a sense that the fresh fruit that most of us eat from farmers' markets, from grocery stores, that helps us be healthy, that the physicians tell us to eat fresh fruit and fresh vegetables, comes at the cost of the health and bodies of this group of immigrants who would be farmers in their hometowns, but now are working to feed us.
I've got to presume you went into this knowing something about the way the whole agricultural system works. Were there any big surprises for you on the road?
In some sense, the degree to which there is a subtle hierarchy in U.S. agriculture, and including California, was a surprise. I knew that on some level, if you're a white U.S. citizen, you're more likely to have a better job than if you're Latino U.S. citizen, than if you're mestizo Mexican, than if you're an indigenous Mexican. But it became very clear that this hierarchy was very active throughout agriculture in California and beyond. The other thing that surprised me related to crossing the border. I knew that the border was dangerous. I knew that a certain number of people die each year. But experiencing the border crossing firsthand was definitely surprising.
I found it interesting that the Treaty try to protect themselves in part by using family networks, making sure maybe they're working with a coyote who's related to somebody in the group so that it kind of protects against the potential for abuse.
Right. That's correct. There are people who come from Central America who come to the northern Mexico border and have to find a coyote, someone they have to decide they can trust, you know, while they're there already, which I think is a much riskier proposition than the Treaty tend to go with someone who's a cousin or a friend of their neighbor or something like that. So they have a sense that that person at least will be trying their best, even if the results aren't the best.
I'm wondering if you can talk about the role of U.S. corn subsidies in sort of creating and maintaining this system.
The Treaty people have been migrating to the U.S. roughly 15 years, something like that, maybe 20. And it looks through my research that a lot of this immigration started after the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed. And the North American Free Trade Agreement, which we call NAFTA, made tariffs illegal so that Canada, the U.S., and Mexico couldn't have tariffs on outside products. But it didn't make subsidies illegal. And a subsidy, in essence, if you think about it, is the exact same thing as a tariff, but in reverse, except that only the wealthier countries can do subsidies. So since NAFTA was signed, the U.S. has increased subsidies on corn from the U.S. by 300%, whereas Mexico hasn't been able to do that, such that now in Oaxaca, in the towns near where the Triqui people live, U.S.-grown corn, largely from corporate agribusiness farms, is underselling the corn grown by the families there. So one of the main factors that's compelling people to leave their home farms to come to the U.S. to work on our farms is this subsidy.
There are a long line of exposés of the suffering and abuse of farm workers, Grapes of Wrath, Harvest of Shame, Edward R. Murrow in 1960, who can forget that one? I mean, I think most Americans know this is not a pretty corner of our economy. I'm wondering how you think this book can influence the national conversation.
I've noticed in the immigration debate overall that immigrants are treated as a group. You know, immigrants do this, immigrants do that. Immigrants drain our economy, immigrants contribute to our economy, etc. But there aren't very many voices of or stories of individual human beings who are immigrants at this point. And one thing I try to do in the book is tell the story not only of my experience migrating with people, but of individual immigrants, quote them as much as possible so that we can understand them as someone, in a sense, like the rest of us. They're human beings, they're mothers and fathers or sisters and brothers and children of someone, hard workers. And I'm hoping that that can be part of how people think about and vote related to immigration reform and other policies.
Well, Seth Holmes, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you, Rachel.
UC Berkeley professor Seth Holmes is the author of Fresh Fruit, Broken Bodies. We've got an excerpt of his book online at our website, californiareport.org. That's the California Report for Thursday, August 22nd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995.